another exciting episode of Pretentious Internet Theater. I'm your host, Andrew Cook, and I'm so leet, I once referred to myself in the fourth person. Before we get started, I'd like to remind you can email us at pretentiousinternettheater@gmail.com. Next episode will be our holiday extravaganza, so your story suggestions you'd like to see featured on this program will be welcomed. Tonight we bring you the exciting conclusion to Damian Nathaniel Wren's On Dark Wings and Dark Nights. Of course, that reminds me of a quote by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. And each man stands with his face in the light of his own drawn sword, ready to do what a hero can. So, without any further ado, the exciting conclusion of On Dark Wings and Dark Nights. Enjoy. Pretentious Internet Theater presents On Dark Wings and Dark Nights, written by Damian Nathaniel Wren, hosted on fanfiction.net. Chapter 4, Execution. Author's note, this chapter mentions Mr. Messias Spitlick and introduces Batmite as well. Both characters make a cameo appearance in an episode of Batman the Animated Series titled Deep Freeze as animatronics, with Bruce Timm and Paul Dini even providing a nod to Batmite's animated day in Filmation, as I will as well. I include the two characters based off this honorable mention and would like to honor Bruce Timm and Paul Dini's fantastic writing, as well as thank them for requesting that, at least within the bounds of Dark Wings and Dark Nights, that Mr. Messias Spitlick's name be pronounced as Paul Dini and Bruce Timm's themselves announced it, Mix-Yes Spitlick. Finally, I would like to take a moment to also thank those of you who have left reviews, especially Pokefan366, who has been particularly encouraging for me during what has become a surprisingly difficult project. Thank you all. Batmite! Batmite! Joker, having found some privacy in another room, ran about tossing around chairs and overturning tables. Batmite! He screamed, peeking under a hanging painting on the wall. Where are you, spineless little fifth-dimensional parasite? Joker looked around the room, determined that Batmite was watching. He was lying quietly in wait, looking to see what Joker would do next. Joker renewed his resolve. Listen to me, you unrepentant runt voyeur. If you don't show yourself for the next 7 seconds, I'm getting Mr. Messy Spetlick in here, and... No! Batmite slowly appeared, hovering in the air just a few feet away from Joker, arms folded in defiance. What? A chill rushed up Batmite's spine as Joker's mockingly warm smile crept up one side of his face, but not quite the other. Joker's voice was smooth, almost silky, as he worked as hard as he could to be non-threatening. Ah, Batmite, Batmite, I simply thought you'd like to make the opportunity to put a smile on the face of the big bad bat. You know, turn that bat frown bat upside down. Batmite's ears twitched as his head tilted oh so slightly to one side. His shoulders relaxed a little, still remained defensive overall, intense. Batmite took a deep breath and rolled his eyes before speaking. I know I'm not gonna like this. What do you have in mind?
Drake Mallard.
Batman's voice trailed off. He had finished analyzing one of the toys from the dock and began looking at the facts behind the encounter with the gray ghost-like Darkwing Duck and company. The aircraft was a custom, hand-built experimental model registered to one Launchpad McQuack, a pilot currently under the employ of Scrooge McDuck of Duckburg, Calisota. Quick search turned up a Duckspace account with a friends list, noting two names of particular interest in St. Canard, Gosselin and Drake Mallard, who lived at the same physical address. The girl's first name and description matched one of Gosselin Waddlemeyer, who was still missing as reported by the St. Canard Police Department only a few months ago. She was finally returned to the orphanage as a result of Darkwing Duck's involvement in a case involving someone known as Taurus Bulba. The precise circumstances of her disappearing remained unknown. In a story reminiscent of his own history with Dick Grayson, Drake Mallard purchased a house in St. Canard and adopted Gosselin almost immediately after her return to the orphanage. She immediately took on her adopted father's surname. He denoted Gosselin referred to Darkwing Duck as Dad during their encounter, further supporting the theory. A quick comparison of records from the Calisota Department of Motor Vehicles proved that the exact height, weight, and eye color were those of Darkwing, who, according to the transponder Batman gave him, was currently located somewhere inside the Audubon Bay Bridge. Crackerjack, he found out, was an exceptionally brilliant toy designer and sociopath, diagnosed with a severe case of manic depression. Known for his especially abrupt and erratic mood swings, there were no months or days to the duration of the moods, apparently just minutes and seconds. Perfect playmate for Joker. Batman turned his attention back to the circuit diagram he had drawn based on what he found in the toy. Two piezoelectric elements were coupled with a few circuits inside, activating a power switch and then broadcasting the sound further on other toys to hear. Taking a look at the circuit itself, though, Batman shook his head. Cheap. Batman removed his pocket PC from his belt and tapped in a few calculations. Without the protective circuits in place, the sound of the proper frequency played at 130 decibels or more would actually fry the makeshift CPU and deactivate the toy connected to it. He took the emitter circuit and amplified it for attaching it to his belt, setting up a defense against him in the process. But to set off a toy army, Crackerjack was going to need some equipment as well, which led to...
St. Canard stereo and speaker, Mr. Darkwing!
Honker stood proudly over the defunct doll as he detailed the possibility of using St. Canard's Opera House like a giant dish to focus the sound necessary to set off Quackerjack's toy soldiers.
The problem is it will require three speakers capable of producing an audible burst of 250 decibels. That's the only place Quackerjack could find them.
Darkwing began speaking, posing dramatically as he goes,
And so, with superior intellect, our hero once again succeeds in deducing the despicable and dastardly scheme driving the Pulsar Animus purveyor of playtime, Quackerjack, and just in time to mangle his monstrous machinations to conquer the fair city of St. Canard.
Darkwing took a step back, looking over his teammates.
Honker? Launchpad? Gosselin?
Darkwing squinted his eyes menacingly as he grabbed his cape and wrapped it around to cover his bill.
Let's get...
A click followed by a short double beep interrupted Darkwing's monologue, followed by Batman's voice.
Darkwing, are you there?
Darkwing blinked, looking confused for a moment before remembering the radio of the Batgator. He patted himself down before finding it in his pocket. Removing it, he pressed the button to reply.
Yeah, what you got?
Batman began speaking, terse as always.
Meet me at St. Canard stereo and speaker in 30 minutes. Quackerjack's gonna be putting a major job tonight. Wherever he goes, the Joker follows. You get your clown... I'll get mine.
Static crackled briefly over Darkwing's speaker before the radio went silent. That? What was that? Darkwing looked towards his entourage with one question on his lips.
Where was I? Oh, yeah.
Darkwing squinted his eyes menacingly as he grabbed his cape and wrapped it around to cover his bill.
Let's get dangerous.
Launchpad and Honker were the first to arrive, hovering the Thundercrack above St. Canard's stereo and speaker. Launchpad scoped out the scene for a moment before relaying the data to Darkwing.
Yeah, DW, it looks like Crackerjack and his guys are already slaving away down there. Get this, they seem to be putting crates in the warehouse, not taking anything out.
Keep an eye on them, LP. Gosselin and I will be there on the rat catcher in 10 minutes.
Okay, DW.
Honker tapped Launchpad on the shoulder as he stared out in front of the Thundercrack's canopy.
Mr. Launchpad, sir, I think we have a problem.
Honker pointed out at the sky, dotted with small toy aircraft heading directly towards them. The sound of machine gun fire could be heard, tiny metallic pellets bouncing off the Thundercrack's titanium shell. Launchpad scoffed.
They're gonna have to do better than that!
Uh-oh. All at once, a number of aircraft split off, firing rockets at the Thundercrack. Launchpad flew the aircraft upwards, just in time to dodge the oncoming attack.
Sir?
Honker said.
They're coming back!
Launchpad vectored the Thundercrack's thrust forward, taking off out of a hover. Careful not to fly himself into a barrage of oncoming missiles, he flew in a graceful arc over the city.
Where are you going?
Honker asked. Launchpad answered, a hint of panic in his voice despite his appearance being calm.
Downtown, the Thunderquack doesn't have any defenses!
Launchpad kicked in Thunderquack's afterburner to put a little more distance between it and the missiles, the flames setting off the closest three.
It's middle of the night, so hopefully these buildings are empty.
Launchpad quickly turned the aircraft on the side, using its rudder and aileron to keep from turning as he slipped to the aircraft between two narrowly spaced buildings. Glass rained on the alleyway below as the windows exploded behind the Thunderquack's powerful engines.
That's about half of them, Launchpad counted. Now what?
Perhaps you could ditch them at Autobot Bay,
Honker suggested. Launchpad turned the Thunderquack towards the bay and was flying above the bridge in no time.
Great idea, Honker! Hold on to your seats!
The Thunderquack's engines cut briefly, sending the aircraft into a lazy glide as it reached the apex of its arc, and then immediate dive into the bay with the remaining missiles close at the Thunderquack's heels. Launchpad kicked the plane's afterburners, Honker and he forcefully thrown back in their seats.
Mr. Launchpad, is this really necessary?
Honker asked.
Sure thing, buddy,
Launchpad replied, vectoring the hover jet's thrust and pulling out of the dive with barely an inch to spare.
water dripping off the plane's belly. The remaining missiles plopped harmlessly into the bay before detonating. Hey, DW! Come on, DW! Darkwing continued navigating the maze of St. Canard and its rat's catcher, noting several individuals on the rooftop overhead when Launchpad contacted him.
What you got, LP?
Crackerjack's ready for us. He sent two squadrons of deadly model aircraft after the Thunderquack. He's probably ready for the rat catcher.
Darkwing thought about the various people on the roof before deadpanning.
Fantastic. Dad?
Goslin looked around questioningly as if to locate something.
What's that buzzing sound? Buzzing sound?
Darkwing hadn't thought about it, but he heard it too. At first he thought it might be a scooter or a small motorcycle. Now it sounded more like a number of them, and you couldn't see any of the scooter gangs nearby. It was then that an explosion set off about three cars back. Darkwing noted several small remote-controlled cars dodging and crisscrossing through traffic.
Hold on, Gothelin!
Darkwing warned and sped off down a side street. About a half dozen tiny cars sped after them.
Wow, they move fast!
Goslin sat turned around in their sidecar, watching the small team of race cars heading their way.
Gothelin!
Darkwing instructed her.
The glue grenades!
Goslin pulled Darkwing's gas gun and dropped a glue grenade in the barrel before taking aim and firing it off. The grenade stuck to the ground, just short of one car, grabbing a wheel. The car spun around on the rest of the glue, ensnaring it as it exploded from being slammed around. Goslin reloaded, taking aim again. She pulled the trigger, unexpectedly ensnaring a pedestrian as Darkwing made an abrupt turn.
Dad!
She ejected.
I ran out of road! Couldn't very well plow us into a building.
Goslin fired a third and fourth and fifth grenade, managing to ensnare a few more cars before one skidded and slammed into a wheel of a school bus, bringing children home from a late field trip. The bus dipped on that corner, the driving turning the bus to overcompensate and causing the remaining car to go underneath the bus. Second car went off, blowing out the front wheels of the bus and sending it skidded into the facade of the St. Canard National Bank building. Darkwing and Goslin responded immediately, turning back to help. Darkwing picked up his radio.
Crackerjack's toy army blew off part of the school bus, causing it to crash from St. Canard National. We've got emergency crews on the way, but we need to make sure this bus is evacuated before we leave. How's it going up there, LP?
Not much better, DW.
The Thunderquack once again lifted out from between the buildings of St. Canard, one remaining flight of model aircraft still hot on its trail. Single shots from 50mm guns were being fired on the Thundercrack's fuselage, and although no one shot was particularly devastating, the shots were beginning to add up pretty fast.
Oh no, no, my baby!
Launchpad shifted the rudder pedals left and right, getting no response. A lucky shot had snapped his rudder cable, and he wondered how long it would be until something else was damaged. Once more, the last flight of the aircraft seemed impossible to shake, and Honk reported upwards as Launchpad went into a barrel roll, dodging the flight's combined attacks.
Mr. Launchpad, we have a problem.
Launchpad looked as he saw another flight of aircraft coming him head-on.
You know what, little buddy? This might just be what we need.
Launchpad inverted his airplane, still watching carefully as the two flights of aircraft approached from his 6 and noon. Suddenly, he slowed the aircraft and yanked back on the stick, diving towards the bay and skidding inches above it. Two flights of aircraft fired off their weapons and, unable to respond in time, either smashed into each other or went down in flames as victims of friendly fire. Honker held his stomach, his face tinged a slight shade of green.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
I think that does it, DW. You need help there?
No, LP. Looks like we got this under control. Head back to St. Canard stereo and speaker. We're rendezvous there as soon as...
Darkwing stopped talking. Goslin's panicked voice over the radio.
Dad!
Darkwing looked in Goslin's direction, noting a half dozen or so remote-controlled cars heading directly for them. The bus was nearly evacuated now, though if he could just...
Get everyone off the bus now! Move!
Darkwing reached into the Ratcatcher's sidecar and pulled a rope with a hook on one end. Securing it to the frame of the bus, he ran into a nearby onlooker with a truck.
I need your truck, now!
Yeah, no problem. The owner of the truck got out while Darkwing hooked the rope into the vehicle's towing rig. Satisfied, he got behind the wheel, backed into position, and threw into gear.
Goslin, is everyone off the bus?
Yeah, Dad! He's the last one!
Darkwing threw the truck into gear and took off, quickly snatching the damaged bus on its side, blocking the street. Jumping out of the truck, he quickly coated the remaining sidewalk using glue grenades, which ensnared two of the cars. The remaining four exploded as they smashed into Darkwing's impromptu blockade. The crowd stood stunned, slowly taking it all in before breaking into thunderous applause. Darkwing grinned, his ego getting the best of him as he began bowing and playing to his audience. It was Goslin who brought him back to reality, sort of.
Dad? Dad? Darkwing! Yeah, Goslin? Have you forgotten? St. Canard stereo and speaker! Crackerjack! The Opera House! Doomsday! Oh yes, let me say goodbye to...
Goslin snatched Darkwing by the cape and began running towards the Ratcatcher.
Come on, we've got to get to the speaker sharp! You're going to save St. Canard whether you like it or not!
Chapter 5. Il Maestro Demente.
Author's note. Dottie is not a misspelling.
It is a reference to the TV miniseries Jekyll, starring James Nisbet, which aired on the BBC during 2007. It was done not only as a reference to Joker's earlier assertions that Batman had called him Daddy, but as a means to further express my own view of how they interact. I'd also like to dedicate this particular chapter to Trex Avery and Fred Quimby, along with Rich Hogan and Metro Goin Mayer, who I'm probably sure owns the cartoon Lock, Stock, and Barrel, for a particular childhood memory known as the Magical Maestro. Please rest assured the Puccini imitation was done out of love for your work, genius which has entertained generations and nothing more. It may be also helpful to those unfamiliar with the aria Lago al Factorium to spend time listening to this 5-minute opus, as it is featured heavily in the finale to Il Maestro Dremente. In particular, I would recommend the performance of Nicole Herria. Now, if you please, turn down the lights and turn up your imagination as you dive into this, the final chapter of On Dark Wings and Dark Knights. Joker looked around the showroom, ringed with Cracker Jack's toy soldiers, feeling a sense of pride. It all came to this. This forced sojourn to St. Canard, the stage was set, and the actors were not only in their places, but at the ready. Batman, too. He could practically smell his sweat. He succeeded in playing with the lights a bit, so that Teddy sat lifelessly slumped in the corner of the room. He admired the purity and innocence of the scene, Teddy's white, furry coat shimmering under a single spotlight, his position giving just a glimpse, lightly glowing blue eyes. Joker completed his little gift by draping a thick black ribbon over Teddy's shoulders with a corresponding black bow hanging about Teddy's chest, and, as a finishing touch, a small note.
To Daddy, with love, from Joker.
Joker stepped back, having put on the finishing touches, and started speaking to the toy soldiers.
Beautiful, isn't it? So shimmering, so warm, so murderous. What kind of madman turns an oversized teddy bear into a machine of murder and mayhem, anyways?
Joker laughed. Oh, yes, me! It was a hearty, uproarious, back-slapping laugh that he shared with the toy soldiers in the room, slapping one of them on the back. It fell straight over, flat, lifeless. Joker stopped laughing.
Where are you? He demanded. Come out, wherever you are.
Joker looked around, seeing nothing, hearing nothing. He held up his left arm, allowing his sleeve to drop, revealing a Joker card. Hearing intently, he began turning very slowly in place, his eyes closed.
Ali, Ali, Oxenfree!
Just then, Teddy turned around, ever so slightly, his eye color shifting abruptly to amber. Joker, following Teddy's lead, spun gracefully as he flicked his wrist. The card went soaring to the corner where Teddy's gaze was fixed and lit up brightly, revealing Batman crouched in the shadows.
Hee-hee!
Joker danced as Batman stood, his eyes narrowing to angry slits. Joker's voice turned serious, menacing, yet still a mockery of Batman's.
You are vengeance. You are the knight.
You... Joker paused momentarily, then chuckled a bit before continuing in a more jovial voice.
You're too old to be playing with teddy bears, aren't you?
Teddy sprang to life, his eyes aglow in a fiery mix of orange-red, glassy, curved black knives extended from his paws like claws, and his mouth opened slightly, revealing rows of jagged black teeth from the same material. He eyed Batman, tracking his movements unerringly as he threw back his cape. Batman looked the ominous creature up and down, probing for a weakness. Its claws were tempered black glass, as were its teeth. It moved in a way that implied it was incredibly heavy and was probably armored under its fur. Joker couldn't have done this. It's one of Cracker Jack's creations. His toy was nothing to be toyed with. The light Teddy's eyes suddenly shut down, revealing eyes of the same deep, glassy black, empty and soulless as they stared at Batman as Teddy's lips curled to a snarl. There was a brief flash of light, and Teddy sprung into action, leaping at Batman and unleashing a fury of spinning kicks, punches, and slashes that pounded the Dark Knight like sledgehammers. He was losing ground, and quickly. Before he realized it, Batman had been cornered, no place to fire his repeller, and Teddy used his girth and height very effectively in blocking off Batman's escape routes. Teddy smiled a jagged smile as his eyes began flashing the fiery mix of red and orange. He held out his left arm and spread it almost finger-like claws, an executioner's blade, 3 feet in length, extended slowly from the outstretched paw. Batman quickly reached into his utility belt, pulling out a device that resembled a set of brass knuckles. He moved slowly, putting them on as Teddy admired the gleaming blade. Lights in Teddy's eyes went out again, his soulless, empty eyes guiding the thrust of his sword. Batman deflected the blade, using the steel in his equalizer, and rolled to one side. Throwing everything he could into a punch, Batman struck Teddy on the side, just below his left rib cage, setting off a shaped charge which struck Teddy like a pile driver. Teddy howled as his body wrenched in response to the blow. Teddy's head snapped around to view Batman, now safely out of range of Teddy's sword. His brow was furred and his eyes were black. His lips were curled in a hateful snarl. That was the last time Teddy was going to telegraph his intent, Batman thought. His eyes were now black for good. Batman removed another set of equalizers from his belt, placing them on his left hand. His expression was intense. Teddy took the blow, which burned off the hair and singed the black flesh below it. Teddy wasn't as hefty as he expected, and the color of the metal beneath his skin explained why. His armor was a light titanium alloy. It would be brittle, but difficult to break. If he could. Teddy leapt again as he unleashed another barrage of deadly spinning kicks and slashes. Batman barely dodged the automaton's sword again and fought as it took a devastating accuracy and unbelievable speed. Suddenly, the sound of gunfire echoed through St. Canard's stereo and speaker, the muzzle flash of Teddy's 50mm gun briefly lighting the gallery. Batman caught a glimpse of Joker's gleeful expression during that time. The clown held up to the second floor near the skylight, ready to make his escape. Batman stumbled back, holding his shoulder as blood dripped from his wound. Teddy, convinced he had the upper hand, struck with his blade. Batman again blocked using his equalizers and struck Teddy on the left side, just below the ribcage. A second charge pounding mercilessly into Teddy's silvery gray-white exoskeleton. Teddy reeled around, driving his right paw down at the center of Batman's back before, boom! His 15mm gun sounded again, leaving a bloody, cauterized wound where the bullet grazed the already rolling Batman, tearing his costume. Teddy's gun blasts were too close. Good thing. The heat cauterizing the wounds, slowing the bleeding. The shots were over-penetrating, meaning he wouldn't have to dig the bullets out later. But that didn't mean the wounds didn't hurt like hell, and a successful shot to the head or a major organ would mean the end of it. Batman stood up and stumbled, still checking his shoulder. Various cuts and lacerations now marked his suit and his body. Defensive wounds covered his arms, all revealed by the shredded sleeves of his costume. The blood loss meant the clock was ticking. Batman had to end this. Now. Batman continued watching the bear, his eyes again aflame. The blows he'd landed had earned Teddy's respect, fiery flashes of orange-red showing caution. Joker took the opportunity to speak.
Who would have thought the great Batman would meet his match in the form of a white, frizzly teddy bear? Shame I already know who's getting the upper hand. But you know what they say, it ain't over till the fat lady sings.
Batman glanced in Joker's direction as he ran off before ducking beneath Teddy's opening slash. Batman turned at his first opportunity and ran towards the wall with Teddy hot on his heels. Running up on the wall, Batman flipped over Teddy, landing on a crouch before delivering a devastating uppercut below Teddy's ribcage with his left hand. A third powerful explosive blast went off, knocking Teddy forward. Teddy spun around after catching himself on the wall. Eyes black. Fake fur and flesh had been stripped from his metallic exoskeleton. The upper left half of his torso and half of his face now exposed exoskeleton along with his entire shoulder and the majority of his left arm. His skin hung ragged and singed at the seams. Teddy's side was now beat to hell. For the first time, Teddy attempted a bite, Batman diverting the beast's head with a right cross. The animal stood its ground, again, waiting. Batman was bleeding, and he knew what that meant. Batman was weakening, getting slower. He was becoming an easier prey each passing second, and his titanium alloy body could wait an eternity for the right moment. Batman continued circling, looking for an advantage. Nothing. He was losing too much blood over time, getting woozy. He stumbled. Teddy was on top of him in an instant, taking full advantage of the slip. Batman heard a sickening crush as Teddy delivered a punch to his chest, sending him flying. The punch was immediately followed by a blast from Teddy's 50mm gun, which grazed the outer part of his thigh. Batman slammed back into the wall and clumped to the ground as Teddy dove in on Batman with his sword. Batman quickly switched from the equalizer from his left hand to his right, barely dodging the blade as he drove the final explosive charge below Teddy's ribcage. The metal shattered from the force of the blow and driving shrapnel in various portions of Teddy's internal systems, tearing and slicing their way through various muscle groups created by strong electric reactive gels Cracker Jack had developed. Teddy stumbled and lost balance, falling on his side. Rolling over, he faced Batman, still snarling. His eyes were amber in color. Struggling to his feet, Teddy took aim with his 50mm and began blasting away with a marked difference in accuracy. Batman drew the grenade from his belt and charged in as Teddy's gun wavered, tossing a small grenade into the opening in Teddy's body. Shot stopped. Teddy's eyes turned green and blue as he flopped where he stood, hunching over lifelessly. He gave Batman one final look, almost pleading, before... Boom!
Batman took cover at a display wall just an instant before the grenade exploded, scattering Teddy to the four winds. Shards of hot glass and metal pierced nearly every surface in St. Kennard's stereo and speaker. Bits of gelatinous goo splattered at the blast side, where Teddy's much heavier endoskeleton lay mangled, twisted, and broken. Batman examined the wreckage. Content that Teddy was not returning, he was set to treating his major wounds and some of the minor ones, with the help of not only his own first aid kit, but those in the men's and ladies' rooms. Walking into the break room, he smashed the glass in one of those vending machines and removed a bottle of orange juice. Drank it rapidly, in another, and then dropped the empty bottles into the trash before heading to the roof. Joker was still headed for the opera house. He wanted to know why.
Hey, DW, you all right down there? I heard an explosion.
Launchpad had launched the Cracker Jack from the roof of St. Kennard's stereo and speaker, allowing Honker to get over his air sickness.
Yeah, LP, it came from inside. Goffle and I on the outside, rounding up Cracker Jack and his men. Once they saw me coming, they immediately surrendered without the least bit of a fight.
Wow, DW, how'd you make that happen?
Darkwing took in a deep breath, proud of himself.
Well, Launchpad, that's what it gets when you're St. Kennard's greatest superhero. Backed up by St. Kennard's greatest sidekick, of course. They saw it coming, the rat catcher, and quaked in fear.
Goslin stared quizzically at the line of individuals, led by Crackerjack, walking calmly into the policeman. Their vacant stares impressed her the most, as if they had no will of their own to speak of.
Hey, Dad, why do you think they surrendered so easily?
Goslin jumped up, snatching card that read 10-6 from one of the mooks, who, after realizing what was happening, bolted for the alley. A bolus came from nowhere and wrapped itself around the fugitive's legs, tripping him up and holding him for St. Kennard DPS.
It's a gift from the Mad Hatter.
Batman left from his spot on the roof and took the card in hand. Dropping it on the pavement, he crushed the card beneath his heel.
For now, it's keeping these men calm. If you have any idea what's good for St. Kennard, you'll do that to every card you find once you get them in holding.
Darkwing looked over Batman. His costume was torn and tattered. Slices crossed his chest, shoulders, and legs. Scratches were in his cheek, and his cowl was sliced through at points. Batman's forearms were now partially exposed and wrapped in bandages. He appeared to have several bullet wounds.
What happened to you?
Darkwing asked, awed by his condition. Batman turned toward the St. Kennard Opera House.
I'm too old to play with teddy bears.
Pulling his repeller from his belt, Batman took aim, fired, and was off. Darkwing gulped loudly.
You mean he went hand-to-hand with that monstrous metallic psychopath? And won? More than I can...
Darkwing fell flat on his back, passed out cold.
This is no time to sleep, Dad! We gotta get to the Opera House!
Darkwing looked around, mildly disoriented. Goslin snatched Darkwing by the hand.
Come on, you too, Honker!
Darkwing picked up the radio and the rat catcher.
Hey, LP, we're headed towards the Opera House with the bat. Make sure things get wrapped up here.
Sure thing, DW,
came Launchpad's reply, and they were off.
Hey, Drek, up here!
Batman entered the Opera House to be greeted by Joker, who looked down at him from the catwalks above. Pulling a pair of scissors from his pocket, Joker reached out and placed them just so, readying himself to cut it. Batman wasted no time, firing his repeller and pulling himself up to Joker's level. Joker frowned.
You didn't happen to bring that unsufferable Darkwing with you, I hope?
As if on cue, a cloud of purple smoke appeared, and Darkwing from behind it.
I am the terror that flaps in the night! I am...
Joker leapt from the catwalk, cutting the rope and releasing a massive sandbag from the ceiling, dropped onto Darkwing, smashing through the catwalk and flattening him backstage. Darkwing moaned painfully, finishing his sentence.
I'm gonna need a good chiropractor.
Hey, Bats!
Joker's voice hovered, lingered over and around Batman like an echo. Joker suddenly fell from the shadows to the roof of the Opera House, holding what looked like a piece of a dressing mannequin.
Break a leg,
Joker screamed, his now airborne body slamming the impromptu club into Batman's shoulder. With every ounce of strength Joker could muster, splinters of wood flew as Batman stumbled and fell, careening onto the stage below. Batman got up, groaning, only to see Joker taking his place upon the podium in the orchestra pit. Brandishing an unnaturally wide yellow grin, he took up a sheet music and he tapped it on the lectern before setting it down. Batman's eyes narrowed, and Joker raised his baton, snickering to himself. Proudly lifting his baton, Joker's eyes lit up with a combination of menace and mischief as it took its first downward stroke. The orchestra pit sprung into action, Largo El Factorium from the infamous opera Barbara of Seville. Batman's tattered costume morphed into a finely tailored suit as his boots, gang dress shoes, and his cape and cowl remained undisturbed. Then, to the surprise of him and Darkwing both, Batman broke into song. Stepping forward, Batman began motioning as he performed. his entire body backing up the surprisingly full baritone in his voice. A name tag appeared over his kerchief pocket, saying, "Hi, my name is..." followed by the iconic symbol as he broke into his first historic verse. Suddenly, Batman's pants disappeared and were replaced by an especially roughly pink tutu. Batman began singing to the audience with his bare legs, dress shoes, and gartered dress socks exposed before dancing a quick ballet. The tutu fell, Batman's suit returning to normal. Smiling now, Joker continued directing the orchestra as Batman endured a series of costume changes. A black striped prison suit, a tennis player and a serve, a football player catching a ball, and all the while... Gosling watched Joker's movements intensely, convinced she'd seen this all before.
"Come on, Honker! We're gonna have to get him before he turns the bat into jelly or something! Bring the bungee cord! Now how do we get to the top of this thing?"
Honker pointed to a ladder, giving Roop access.
"There you go, Gosling! Good job, Honker! Now let's get dangerous!"
Launchpad ran to Darkwing's side, carrying a bicycle pump which he used to reinflate the flattened Darkwing. "There you go, DW! Now what?" Darkwing disappeared, falling from the sky and landing in the barber chair that appeared on stage with a thud. The unfazed Batman, dressed as a barber, continued his impassioned aria. Batman turned around, right hand over his heart as he thrust his left hand skyward to reveal a particularly nasty-looking chewed-up straight razor. Leather straps crossed Darkwing's wrists and ankles. Darkwing turned towards the orchestra pit, realizing instantly who was in control.
Uh-oh.
Batman turned his attention to Darkwing as he continued singing, now covering the duck's face with shaving cream. Raising his razor high, he timed his swipes with the razor, one for each exclamation. Batmite appeared over Joker's shoulder, hovering.
Mr. Joker, I don't think Batman's having as good a time as you said he would. I think he looks angry.
Anger overtook Joker's entire being.
Of course he's not happy,
Joker snapped.
But oh, what a laugh I'm having now.
Joker again began cackling as Batmite disappeared. His words faded with him, sadness lingering.
I only wanted to help.
Honker finished measuring off the bungee cord and tied it to an anchor on the roof of the opera house. Gosling, ever the adventurer, tied the other end of the bungee cord around her waist.
You sure you have this right, Honker? I'd really hate to go splat.
Honker looked at Gosling, his expression smug.
I calculated it down to the millimeter. You just grabbed Joker's baton.
Batman, still in his barber's costume with cape and cowl firmly in place, was searching the stage for Darkwing behind curtain and under barber chair. As Batman searched, Gosling jumped. Gosling came within reach of the Joker's baton, attempting to snatch it as Joker proudly brought it up high above his head. A lazy second pass before the bungee cord, stretched to its limit, snatched Gosling down from the roof. Hawker helping her up.
"Keen!" she exclaimed. "I got it on my first try!"
Grinning wildly, she held the baton in both hands, breaking it over her knee as the performance of Lago alla Factorium came to an end below. Joker wasn't laughing. The music stopped. Batman at center stage, his wounds healed, his costume mended. Batman fired his rappel to the roof of the opera house, swinging over the orchestra pit to the podium where Joker stood waiting. Batman grabbed Joker by the collar, yanking him close as Joker presented Batman with a question.
"Daddy, can we go home now?"
Batman looked around and released Joker. Small team of stunned orderlies rushing in to take control. They were already back at Gotham via Arkham Asylum, courteously, no doubt, of Batmite. Jeremiah Arkham removed his right hand from his coat pocket, adjusting his glasses. He looked over to the Dark Knight, his expression disapproving. His voice was venomous.
"Thank you, Batman. We'll take it from here." Certain you know the way out?
Goslin and Honker were the first to arrive in the orchestra pit, marveling at the disappearance of the bat, his clownish opponent. Goslin reached down to the podium, picking up a small white card, motioning dramatically as he spoke.
Hey, it's one of those 10-6 cards that turned everyone into zombies.
She flipped the card over a few times in her hand before giving it to Honker.
How do you think it works?
Honker replied in his usual meek way, quietly slipping the card into his backpack.
I don't know, Goslin. I don't know.
Fiend. Author's notes. Batman, Joker, Alfred, and Jervis Tetch, a.k.a. the Mad Hatter, along with Gotham City, Axis Chemicals, the Batcave, and the Palisades Wade Manor, are all property of DC Comics and were used here without permission. Darkwing Duck, Drake Mallard, Goslin Mallard, Honker Muddlefoot, Launchpad McQuack, Morgana Macabre, Crackerjack, Mr. Banana Brain, Teddy the Rat Catcher, the Thundercrack, Crackerjack Toys, Wiffle Boy, Cuckoo Fizzy Water, and the City of St. Canard, along with the State of Calisoda, the Audubon Bay Bridge, are property Disney Corporation, and were also used without permission. 1961, Report of the Register of Copyrights, General Revision of U.S. Copyright Law, cites examples of activities of courts regarded as fair use, among them use of parody and some of the content of the work parodied. U.S. Copyright Law Office, fact sheet of fair use of copyright works, in such and such authority I proceed. Finally, I'd like to particularly pay homage to the work of Frank Miller in The Dark Knight Returns, which succeeded in bringing Batman back to his roots. Also to Kevin Conroy, who has inevitably defined the voice and character of Batman for nearly 20 years, of no less importance to me than style of creativity of Mark Hamill and Kevin Michael Richardson in their portrayals of the Joker in Batman the Animated Series and Joker in The Batman, respectively. Despite whatever difference may exist in the portrayal of these characters, it is your work, dear sirs, that has defined them, given them light, and made it possible for them to continue to captivate, enthrall, and inspire me for more than 2 decades. And for that, I most sincerely thank all of you. And thus our tale on Dark Wings and Dark Knights comes to a close. Yet, Damian Nathaniel Wren leaves us with so many unanswered questions. Will Honker Muddlefoot succumb to the temptation of using the card? Will this lead to a sequel? Is Darkwing Duck the terror that flaps in the night because he doesn't wear trousers? And most importantly, will I continue to do funny voices while reading these stories? To answer that one, I perhaps will, although I imagine it was somewhat difficult while I changed voice to voice and there wasn't much consistency, but I did my best. And my best is good enough and better than most of the plebeians you'll hear out there. And I know you agree. Not to mention, 14 episodes in this long and winding road, you pretty much know what you've come to expect out of me by now. Until next time, this is your host, Andrew Cook, reminding you that there is much drama on the internet, but only the best makes pretentious internet theater. Good night, and the pleasure was all yours.